Do you like the Star Wars? Well, you've come to the right place because this is Cole Jedi Cole Houston coming at you with none other than my co-host, Eddie Medina.
Hola, Rancor Tears. How are y'all doing tonight?
Rancor Tears, indeed. And in fact, oddly enough, normally I would hit you if you said something like that, but I'm going to have to let you have this one. Because tonight's episode of the Rancor Pit, or today's, depending on what time of day you're arriving, since ideally you can discover us any old time you want, where is Mickey and George, where we're finally tackling the weighty issue that pretty much was the death knell of the original version of the Rancor Pit. And that is the Walt Disney Pictures, Walt Disney Corporation's acquisition for $4 billion of Lucasfilm Limited.
$4 billion, which is interesting because, and this speaks a lot to George Lucas's character. It's reported that he's going to be donating a sizable amount of that sale to charity, to charities dealing with education and so forth. So I think that's a pretty decent move on his part.
Not really. I mean, you know, at the point where you're getting paid $4 billion for anything, you know, he's no spring chicken. He's got enough money to last him two or three more lifetimes. So, not to mention, you know, whatever he socked away in all those years beforehand.
Oh yeah, exactly.
It's not like that $4 billion was the big payoff.
Or the exactly. Payoff. He's probably living the rest of his life off of the Taco Bell money from episode one.
I think episode one was probably a huge boon, even if, I mean, the whole thing could have failed to the box office, but it made such a fortune in merchandising.
Yeah.
It ruined a lot of people, as we found out, but
yeah,
that's what they get for buying heavily into episode one, sight unseen.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, but yeah, I'm sure a lot of people are wondering, well, what did I mean by the death knell, the original version of the Rancor Pit? And, in fact, I can't lay the blame solely at the feet of the Disney acquisition, which, when I bothered to do a little research just now, I discovered was over a year ago.
Yeah, October 30th.
How is that a year ago? And it seems like it was just yesterday, but then
it really does. And when I was kind of just poking around the internet for the latest news the other day, I thought to myself, it could not have been a year ago. But sure enough, yeah, October 30th, 2012, the day that will live in infamy in the hearts of Star Wars
fans. Those
who
remember what day it was.
Yeah.
You know, the odd thing is, what I was getting at really quickly on the, because I don't want to dwell on this too much, because then it would sound like I'm bitter or something, and I'm not. The original Rancor Pit, as you may know, was just me yammering away for half an hour about some Star Wars subject that crossed my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it was that whole concept was getting tiresome to me, if not to anybody else, of the two or three people who ever dialed one up. Though, ironically, I did discover recently someone actually did dial that up, on the old ones up. So I guess, you know, they still at least pique someone's curiosity. But, you know, I just couldn't get excited about, you know, what to talk about next. And then this hit about a year ago, a little over a year ago. And so, you know, naturally, that's the perfect thing to talk about. I could go on for half an hour about that. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't, and I didn't, and I didn't, and after a while, a week turned into a month, and a month rapidly turned into nearly a year, apparently. Mm-hmm. And I realized, you know, I never got around to saying anything about it, so that's really one of the reasons we're doing tonight's show. Yeah, it's been a year ago, but it's still relevant, and it will continue to be relevant.
And that's the thing, we're not a show so much that we're just... We don't date ourselves by giving you the latest updates and news. The purpose of the show is just to talk about Star Wars and what makes it tick. And honestly, this is less about what the latest news coming down the, you know, pipe about the new movies and more about...
You nearly said coming down the pike, didn't you? You just didn't want to be me.
Yeah. You caught that, huh?
You didn't want to get Stu all over you if he listens to the show.
Yeah, yeah. But it's more about the general excitement of what is to come, and kind of in a way it it goes back to what we talked about in the last episode in the Wonder Years. Cole, when you first heard about the news, what was your initial reaction and thoughts on it?
Absolute abject panic. No, actually, really? No, I did not. What my first thought was, really, I can't say I was exactly surprised.
No, no.
It was bound to happen, and in a way, I would rather, it's going to sound kind of odd, because, you know, Disney typifies that kind of giant corporate machine that swallows up every property in sight.
Sure.
But, you know, Disney and Lucasfilm had already had a long association.
Exactly.
And, frankly, you know, one of the things I was going to talk about on that next Rancor pit, had it ever been recorded, was how do we feel as fans about the fact that within seemingly hours, but, you know, within a few days of the acquisition, there was already talk of Episode 7. There was already talk of this project and that project and a Boba Fett solo movie and a Han Solo solo movie.
And a Han Solo solo movie.
the solo solo. Oh, solo solo. You know, how do we feel about that? Is that rushing things too much? And then it occurred to me, you know, months and months later, as I was reflecting on the fact that I never recorded anything, that, you know, Disney has done more in the last year with the property than Lucasfilm did in the last five.
Exactly. Yeah.
So from that standpoint, it's a golden age for Star Wars, or at least can be.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that amused me, though, a year ago, was the Star Wars fan community was just alight with, you know, oh, there goes the neighborhood. You're gonna, you know, and there were all kinds of things for people who have skills I'll never possess were going and adding Mickey Mouse ears to Vader in every scene in A New Hope.
Yeah.
Or, you know, doing any number of other things. I would not be surprised. I would be surprised if no one had done this, and that's to redub all of Vader's lines as Mickey. Oh, when I left you, I was the learner. Now I am the master. Ha ha.
Oh, my gosh. That was pretty good. That was definitely Mickey and not – for a second, I thought you were going to sound more like Mike Tyson. But
when I left you, I was –
yeah, let's stop while we're ahead.
It was basically Mickey with a lisp.
Yeah.
Oh, when I left you, I was – that was actually the worst Mike Tyson. He will probably come and punch me.
You bring up a good point. You know, Lucasfilm and Disney were already – pretty strong partners, because I remember when my family took a trip back in 1990 to the Disney parks in Florida, they were already at that point intertwining the two companies, you know, with Star Tours. I'm not sure if Star Tours came out way back then, but I do remember specifically that, you know, we went and saw the Indiana Jones Stunt Spectacular. The gift shops were just full of Star Wars and Indiana Jones merchandise. You know, Last Crusade was about to come out, I believe. So yeah, it's been a good long time that the two have actually
Absolutely.
Partnered up.
I think one of the biggest problems I had was people were like, oh my God, you know, now it's going to be Mickey Mouse ears on everything. It's like, have you not been around since
too
Star
late.
Tours?
Too late on that one.
There's over 100 mashup action figure statues, posters, book covers, you name it.
Yeah, yeah.
The entire Disney catalog has been the entire Star Wars catalog by now.
Exactly.
I mean,
yeah.
you name it. Mickey, Donald, you know, Minnie's, of course, being the only girl, has played the only girl, or the only girls. But, you know, the thing about it is, we've already had all this. What are we panicking about?
Yeah, a lot of people did kind of hit the panic button right away. And I must have been in the minority, because when I first heard it, my initial reaction was excitement. I was genuinely excited to just speculation of what was going to come next. I may have, after a few days before they announced Episode 7, I guess a small part of me feared that they would try to do the popular Hollywood move and reboot the series, which I was really hoping they wouldn't. But thank goodness that they're not. But I was excited, and I'll tell you one of the reasons why. Because Disney, believe it or not, for like you said, kind of gives us that fear of it being a big corporation a la Walmart, where it just sucks in like the blob and you got Steve McQueen running from him. But in reality, Disney is very hands off with the franchises that they purchased. I mean, look at what with Marvel, with the Marvel movies.
And there you have it, because when this was announced to the general public, being who I am, absolutely everyone I knew in any capacity, I was suddenly like the person that every single person I know in any way came to sound out on an opinion for this.
Yeah.
You know, oh, well, we all got to check in with Cole to see what he thinks about this. You know, like I'm Sarek or something. His vote carries others.
Oh, my gosh.
It's just, you know, it's okay. But one of the things that I pointed out is in the Star Wars community, I forget there's a name for that. Like when you draw charts where you have one circle representing one thing and one circle representing another, and then there's that little bit of overlap, you know, where the two meet.
Yeah.
And it's that same sort of thing. You have a Star Wars community that circle sometimes collides with the Marvel community.
Yeah.
But each one of them, the bulk of those communities are pretty inclusive or exclusive to themselves. And then there's that little point where they both touch. And then there's a small percentage of both communities that exist in both communities. And the problem is that, you know, the fanboy switchboard was alight with, oh no, it's Mickey's taking over our beloved Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And all I could think of was 4 years ago, oh no, Mickey's taking over our beloved Marvel. And the problem is that so much of the Star Wars fan community wasn't part of the comic fan community. Mm-hmm. By and large, the superhero comic fan community. And
yeah.
Needed only have looked at what happened when Disney acquired Marvel.
Yeah.
To realize that, like you say, they're very kind of, they allow a certain degree of autonomy because I think Disney recognizes more than you might imagine that if you don't rock the boat, it keeps right on sailing.
Exactly. And, you know, aside from, and also in addition to the Marvel franchise, how they really let it continue in its way, if anything, you know, nudged it into a better direction. They did the same with Pixar. Just going a few years further back from the Marvel acquisition, when they
acquired
Pixar,
our beloved Pixar.
Yeah, yeah. There was people up in arms about that too, saying that they were going to change and they were going to take it in a direction that was going to be a lot more commercial and a lot less focused on story and quality. But I'm thinking, no, they're not. And sure enough, I mean, we've gotten some of the best Pixar movies in that time since Disney has purchased them. I believe Toy Story 3 came out after the fact. But Disney is not at all the blob. It's not just going to suck up everything and just, you know, they're not the Borg, I guess I should say, if we want to get really sci-fi.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. They're not the Borg. They're not going to assimilate and turn everything into the Disney version of itself.
Yeah. If anything, this is what the franchise needs. It needs Mickey dollars behind it. It needs that push because I don't think anybody has been overly impressed since the prequels came out. Clone Wars has been decent, but it's Star Wars wasn't carrying that weight that everyone was hoping it would. And with this new acquisition, the reason why I was so excited, because I thought to myself, and this is probably what the franchise needs right now. It needs Lucas to just kind of let go of the reins, hand it over, and take it into a new generation of viewers. And Lucas himself even said that his whole intention was to pass the Star Wars reins over to a new generation of filmmakers during his lifetime. And it's not like he's given it over, you know, full force to strangers. We have Kathleen Kennedy still as an executive producer. Well, not executive producer. Well, yeah. But as the president of Lucasfilm. So we have someone in Kathleen Kennedy that we as fans can trust to understand the franchise and to understand where it needs to go to grow and to reach that next generation of fans.
Absolutely. And we also have, you have this long history of Disney recognizing that if they don't go in and try to reconfigure and reorder and, you know, retool something in their image, then mm-hmm. it continues to be the very thing that made it worth their while to purchase in the first place.
Exactly.
If you go in and just change everything top to bottom, get their people out and your people in, and then the money goes away. And in many ways, I think Disney is one of the shrewdest businesses out there because they know how to utilize a new acquisition in ways that most of corporate America still doesn't get.
Exactly.
And the model that existed worked because that's what made this, you know, brought this to the point where it was worth $4 billion.
Oh, yeah.
And if you go and change that model, are you, you know, where is the logic in that?
Exactly. Exactly. And it's what's funny is Lucas even told the story about how when the very first Star Wars movie came out back in the 70s, he said he actually had quite a few people in the industry who made the comment that after seeing the movie that they thought this movie should have been made by Disney, that they were surprised that this was not a Disney movie to begin with. So it's kind of funny how all these, you know, decades later, lo and behold, it's going to, the next Star Wars is going to be a Disney movie. I think it's kind of neat that way.
Absolutely. And the thing about it is, I think that the biggest noticeable change that I'm aware of going in is that, frankly, they don't need them anymore. The Fox will know is sort of shut out of the distribution angle. And these will be the first Star Wars films not to feature the Fox fanfare at the beginning, the extended fanfare.
Yeah.
And that is the only thing, I think, to me that will seem a little out of place, a little disconcerting.
Well, yeah, yeah. But that's a small...
Oh, yeah, it's a minor thing. Over.
Because, I mean, if you were one of the few people who actually saw Clone Wars in the theater, you know, it was a little different to see the Warner Brothers logo come up and then Lucasfilm, but once you're 2 minutes into the film and all the action is and things are blown up and lightsabers are slashing things in half, you kind of forget. So that's really, you know, that's just something that people are going to get used to pretty quickly.
Well, and that's right. I think the biggest hurdle in any of this is going to be a hurdle that was going to be faced by anything is. You're going to have at least your first generation fans are going to be the most terrible critics of anything that comes out of this new franchise. Your first generation fans were probably the worst about episodes 1 through 3. There had been such a gap and because the approach in many ways was so decidedly non-Star Wars as we had all determined it ought to be, that my biggest concern about episodes 7 through 9 and anything else, you know, for me, the whole Clone Wars thing had zero appeal. I didn't go see the movie. I did eventually watch the entire run of the, what was it? Anywhere from 37 seconds to 2.5 minute episodes.
The Samurai Jack Star Wars?
Yes, because the annoying thing about that is, and I've talked about it in other shows, was the fact that I jokingly said this to somebody, and that it was borne out to be true, they actually had previously on. When your runtime is expressed in seconds because 1 minute exceeds the runtime, previously on is not something you want to be wasting any of those crucial seconds on. Previously on Clone Wars. And now tonight's Clone Wars. Somebody turned on a lightsaber. Wow, I'm glad you caught me up.
Yeah, because if they had shown any more than that, it would have become a double feature and not a previously on.
I wasn't thrilled with the style on that one, though in a way, you know, some of the characters from that kind of grew on me, like Roron Korob, which I'm amazed I actually know that name off the top of my head. But why not? Because I have a hammerhead fetish. You know, the Ithorian Jedi. That and the fact that somebody had the idea of giving the Athorians some sort of like Jedi bullfrog powers, which I thought was rather unique. But I did not like at all the style for the Clone Wars series that followed. I did not like a lot of the conceptual stuff. And granted, some of the conceptual stuff, like the individuality amongst clones, had crept in by episode 3. So I'm having to live with that as on-screen canon, even though it's patently ridiculous. But I think the reason that it did show up on the big screen in episode 3 is solely so that that could be canon for the cartoon. So, you know, here I cite all of this as an example of, you know, an old school Star Wars fan from the outset, from the early days, from a long time ago.
Oh, here we go.
Well, just like mere years before yourself, but you know that it's going to be a tough sell. It could be the best movie ever made, and there are going to be people who hate it from the outset.
Of course, of course. But, you know, that's why you just don't go in with any expectations other than the excitement that the saga is going to live on. And, you know, see the movie, enjoy it or not enjoy it, complain or love it. Me, I'm going to go into it like everything else. I'm going to go into it with excitement, and I'm going to enjoy it for what it is. It's just the next chapter in the Star Wars saga that I never thought I was ever going to get to see.
That is true, because I think we talked about on the Wonder Years how I was going to be like an old geezer by the time the episode 9 came out. And it's even worse than I thought.
Well, getting back into what we, of course, it's so early, and it's going to be hard to determine what is coming and what's going to, how it's going to play out. But what little we do know, I think, is exciting as far as production. The most important thing to me, I mean, there's several things that are exciting, but the most important thing to me is they've already said they're going to focus less on CGI and more on traditional model animation. And when I heard that, that was just another point in their favor in my book.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, with CGI, it's all well and good. It lets us do things we couldn't do before. But like I always said about the prequels, just because you can do something in CGI doesn't mean you should.
Well, I think a great example of where CG can really go awry, and episode 1 is replete with this. I often cite, you know, I'm sure people think, oh, he's going to talk about the Gungan battle again. And no, I'm not going to bring that one up again. There's another one that bothers me no end, because the thing about it is, some of the pod race characters, I think there were one or two that were practical.
Yeah.
Like the Mahonic or whatever. It was like a Reese species character. Was actually, they had a guy in a suit with a mask. But most of the pod drivers were computer generated. There were a couple of shots during the pod race. I thought that they were puppets. And then I found out they were CG. And like, okay, you have CG and you made it look like it's a hand puppet?
Yeah, exactly.
I think it was the character Rats Tyrell. I think when he bites the big one and crashes into a stalactite or stalagmite or one of those.
But as a viewer, I'm okay with that. I would rather something look. I would rather know that something is a well made, well animated puppet than a not so well done CG character.
Well, that's the problem. Is it was a CG, but it looked like a crappy puppet.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what I didn't understand.
I guess,
like, why?
You know,
why?
Maybe trying to make it look more practical or what, but
just make it practical.
Dreadful. It would have looked better if they'd used a practical puppet.
Exactly, exactly. But I'm really excited that they said that they will focus less on CG and more on the traditional model animation for these movies.
That is very good, because the biggest problem also becomes, when you try to translate things you did in CG into the real world, they don't always work that well. Which is important in merchandising, which is, as we talked about on the show, very much part of what Star Wars made it a financial juggernaut worth $4 billion. And, you know, going in, I think the best advice, this is something I'm going to try to do for myself going in, is take the approach I took with Blade Runner when I decided to give it a second chance, and then it became one of my favorite films of all time. And that is to just pretty much divorce myself as much as I can from everything that's come before and just let this be what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So going into episode 7, I'm going to let it be what it is. What it is not going to be, this is something I really wanted to point out on this particular show, is, you know, within hours of episode 7's announcement, a lot of really talented artists produced a lot of really incredible imagery that either they themselves or somebody else immediately turned into episode 7 posters.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, I'm going to rain on somebody's parade here, but the, you know, evil doesn't go away or doesn't die, it just evolves. That's fan-made, kids. That didn't come from Disney. That's not an official episode 7 poster, nor it is an official episode 7 tagline. It frankly has fanboy written all over it, in case you hadn't noticed. The Star Destroyer, partially, you know, it's split in half in the front, not from Disney. I'm seriously questioning the whole Wonder Twins thing from Warner. That's a kettle of fish there.
Yeah. Keep that discussion on for Hey Kids Comics.
Put a little bleed over there for fans of both.
One of the more interesting fan-made posters that I thought was actually pretty cool was there was one where they showed the Millennium Falcon had crashed onto the surface of a planet, and it was very, you know, like dusk or something. It was very dark and morbid looking in it. And I just thought, man, that what story would that image tell for a movie? If you start off a movie with the Millennium Falcon destroyed, where do you go from there?
Oh, absolutely. And when you have an iconic image like that, I mean, you know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
Even in its worst shape, you know what that is or was. So that that does speak volumes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the bigger question now becomes, there's so much post-Episode 6 that has been written. And, you know, so there's a lot of the Expanded Universe fan base that are just, you know, anxious to see their favorite characters that, to me, don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
To put too fine a point on it, but the problem with the Expanded Universe is even as much as Lucasfilm tried to maintain a continuity, they didn't. Yeah.
No way. And coming from someone who actually enjoys the Expanded Universe, I love the New Jedi Order book series. There's a lot of the Expanded Universe, especially in the comics, that I really love. That being said, I do not want any of it showing up in the sequels, because I want them to give me something fresh and new.
Exactly.
I'm not saying if they decide to throw in Mara Jade, or if they decide to throw in a character here and there we may be familiar with from the novels, that's all fine and good. That's not what I'm talking about. What I don't want to see, and people are already saying, is, well, they should make the Thrawn trilogy. I love the Thrawn trilogy books, but I would hate to see them do that for the movie.
It's too self-limiting, quite frankly.
Yeah, exactly. There are people saying they should take aspects of Legacy from the comic book series. No. Let this evolve naturally from episode 6. Let it, wherever, obviously we're jumping further ahead in time from Jedi, but let it evolve from the Return of the Jedi storyline and give us a hint of what happened between, but don't give us a rehash of something that we've already seen before in the novels or the comics.
I'll just say one thing here. If Jackson is not in one of these films, I am going to be very disappointed, because I've been waiting a long time.
Okay, Jackson gets a pass.
Thank you. That's the only Expanded Universe I will allow.
I wonder, we're only on episode 4. I wonder how many episodes we've actually brought up Jackson.
We may have brought Jackson up on nearly every one now.
But I'm excited. I mean, look, they have John Williams coming back. They have Ben Burtt coming on board. And they said, not only are they filming it in the UK, they've said that they're going to shoot it on 35mm film. as opposed to digital.
Very nice.
So I thought that was a really, really smart move on their part, is to go back to 35 millimeter film.
That's a, you know, go back to the basics.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I mean, to shoot on 35 millimeter film in the digital age, that is pretty ballsy.
Yeah, yeah. But do it. I say do it. Do it and just it will add to the feel of what we've seen
exactly.
before.
Exactly. Will feel more like a Star Wars film.
Mm-hmm.
And pay attention to what I would also like to see is that flow where there's a certain design aesthetic that one of the lead designers for episode one was Doug Chiang.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was his name.
Yeah.
Who did not, in my opinion, understand the Star Wars design dynamic as well as a lot of others have. And a lot of the choices that were made in the episodes 1 through 3, it just felt like you were watching something different, where there's a kind of this flow between Star Wars and Empire and Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, granted, you don't see a lot of new things, a lot of new designs, but they work. Anything that's new works within that context in ways
exactly.
that a lot of the stuff, like the air car that in episode 2 that Obi-Wan and Anakin drive around
the convertible,
in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just like
the air Corvette.
It was like a conceit to an aging George Lucas trying to recapture his childhood.
It would have worked for a Nick Fury movie, but not so much for, you know, Attack of the Clones.
I have no problem with them having some sort of hover vehicle, but the design of it was dead wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
It was too much like cruising in Modesto than trying to catch an assassin on Coruscant.
Yeah. I agree with you, and I think a lot of fans had that same complaint. They seemed to rectify it slightly once they got a little bit more to closer to episode 3.
Absolutely, and but, I think you also lost that sort of Super Mario kind of outrageously long-winded journeys to get somewhere.
I thought you were going to reference Bob Hoskins for a minute.
I'll try to work him in somewhere if you know the fact that you have these repeated, like, ridiculously long, drawn-out, the pod race.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen, you know, a rendering that maps out the route of the pod race. But if you watch the pod race, it's difficult to discern, you know, if they're on some kind of a circuit. Some sort of really, you know, bizarre, irregular, meandering oval. They never seem to pass the same place twice. Any given hazardous thing like the cavern, everybody who was going to crash into anything in the cavern did it on the first lap. And it just didn't seem to feel, you didn't feel like you ever made a lap.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost like, okay, lap two, we're going to go east this time.
Mm-hmm.
And then the whole Coruscant chase through like Electro Tower District and all these other stream of ridiculous, pointless, it was just like sightseeing. I think that it was one of those things where, oh, that worked in the second Death Star to have different things you pass through.
Mm-hmm.
Let's have that. Let's have more of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to get back to the basics and start concentrating on the story and not the visuals.
Exactly.
And concentrate on the characters. The strength of the first three films, especially Star Wars, I mean, for its day, it's just so rich with things going on that when you get into the later episodes, you just don't have that world anymore.
Yeah, yeah. And don't be afraid to challenge us with a movie we weren't expecting. I didn't feel, and this is an episode about the Disney Lucas thing, but just to quickly touch on the prequels. There wasn't anything there, and I do like the prequels, I honestly do, but there was just nothing there that felt like they were even trying to challenge themselves to give us something, you know, unique or to make them a modern day classic. I mean,
that's a good point. They lack that mythology that the first three gave you. It was more just let's go out and do things because we already know where this is headed. I think that really the only thing that when I really got excited about the prequels, again, by episode three, things kind of calmed down a bit. We knew what we were doing. It was, of course, the big opening battle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But even that, it got a little bit overblown. But, you know, at the end of the day, like I said, Disney is doing more with Lucasfilm than Lucas was. And what's fascinating, if they're going to be kind of kicking it old school in the production of the actual practical production of the next series, it's really remarkable that they're doing that considering the fact that they now wield via Lucasfilm an amazing technology that it's literally like almost like the best of everything Disney and Lucasfilm were always at their best have been best at, and that is pushing technology in a good way. And that is this new technique that I think they're going to be using for the production of Star Wars Rebels, which is the new animated series, where they're actually rotoscoping live actors to guide the animation. But the animation is occurring simultaneous to the live action source material.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
Uh-huh.
We're talking very little to no post-production. They're not just like doing motion capture and then going and using that to guide the animation. The animation is happening on top of the motion capture in real time. Which suggests that you're going to get to a point where Disney could produce things like in the theme parks. You could have an animated feature, completely improv, completely off the cuff. And unique every single time.
Oh, wow.
A group of very talented actors who come out and do things, and what the audience sees is this animated character doing exactly that. And to some degree, they're actually already doing that at the theme parks with some interactive visual things like that.
Oh, wow.
Where an animated character actually interacts with the audience that's right there in real time because the actor with the voice is able to, you know, see who's out there and address specific people. But the animated character that the people are seeing is actually, you know, turning and looking directly at them in real time.
Mm-hmm.
And to take that sort of idea and turn an animated production into something you can probably turn around on something almost akin to the South Park rotation is pretty amazing stuff.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. And Rebels is going to be the first official step in the new Disney Star Wars universe in that direction. So I think that's going to be an exciting thing to behold once we get it.
And, you know, that's one I'm probably going to be a little bit more on board for than I was with Clone Wars. Because, for one thing, the whole clone thing was just, it just smacked of one of those little things. It was like, you know, the nuclear age was the best thing that ever happened to science fiction. It was that sort of thing where just, you know, the concept was just too easy an out.
Yeah. Yeah.
My friend Steve, who's been on many of the shows way back before episode one even came out, was talking about it. For some reason, he had it in his head that he had seen somewhere, and if he didn't see this somewhere, that somebody else had already come up with this, then he's the most brilliant person for coming up with this himself and not realizing it was his own work. Regardless, that he thought that he'd seen somewhere that the concept of the Clone Wars was that it was sort of like World War I and World War II, where you have these two massive intergalactic wars that were so similar that they became colloquially known as the Clone Wars. And to me, that's a much better concept than it just being clones we have, war we have.
Mm-hmm.
Clone War has begun, it has.
Oh my gosh.
You know, it's just such a simplistic approach to something. That,
you know,
I think cloning is just one of those easy out things like the nuclear age became, you know?
Oh, yeah. Just like, you know, with the early days of Marvel where everything was radioactive.
Exactly. Or, you know, old sci-fi movies, you know. Why is that Katie did a 12 stories tall radiation?
Yeah.
See how much, you know, 40 years ago it had to be magic.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's science.
Midichlorians. What? No, no, let's not go there. Let's not go there.
Don't do that to me now.
But, you know, you gotta give it up to George Lucas. I mean, on the one hand, he was probably ready just to let go of Star Wars because he was probably just so sick of everyone, you know, dogging him for making all the wrong moves. But, you know, at least you gotta give it to him for handing over the reins and, you know, giving it to the next generation. But what's funny is, you know, in the press, he very much says that it's time. He wants to move on. He wants to explore other things that's not movie making. But his son Jet has let on that he's actually having a harder time letting go than he's telling people. He said Jet actually said it's a little like a parent dealing with their kid going off to college. Like they want to let him go, but then they kind of, you know, they're very hesitant and, you know, just letting them go. But
So George Lucas is kind of an empty nester now. It's an empty nest lined with millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah. Okay, so with the new movies, they've already started casting. You know, and they just said just days ago that they have confirmed R2-D2 will be in it, which is cool because he's one of my favorite characters. The only two roles that they've publicly said that they're casting, and of course these are not going to be the real character names. One is Rachel, and she's described as a teenage girl. They are not being race specific, but they do describe her as she was young when she lost her parents, and she is around the age of 17, street Martins, and strong. The other character is Thomas, who is, they said, over 18. They said they are not opening the role to all ethnicities, so they obviously have something a little bit more in mind for that character. They said for this one, he's a young adult who has grown up without a fatherly influence. Now, immediately people were saying, oh, another orphan. If you read closely, they did not say he's an orphan. They said without a fatherly influence, so that doesn't mean the father is dead. He's just absent from his life. So I'm going to venture to guess that Thomas probably has some sort of connection to an existing character, whereas Rachel, since they're not being race-specific, she's going to be a whole new character.
If you want a father or an absence of fatherly influence, you look no further than Han and Chewbacca, because at the holiday special is in the invitation, Chewbacca is a deadbeat father of the First Order. And I can imagine that Han would fall into that mold pretty quickly himself if he was suddenly confronted with fatherhood. He's like, oh, I gotta go fire up the Falcon.
Okay. So you're not saying that Thomas is just a code name for Lumpy?
No. Otherwise, it wouldn't really matter ethnicity because you'd be just covered in fur and rubber suit. But Han Solo's sole role model for how to maintain the family life is his co-pilot, who like annually goes home to pay his family a visit and chuck a stormtrooper off the roof. Like nobody's going to notice. It's not like Get Shorty where you can rig the railing to fall off and then just
Get Shorty.
The Empire's going to come looking for that guy.
Oh, my gosh.
And they're
going
to find him at the bottom of your tree.
Oh, my gosh. Get Shorty reference. Oh, it's the first Get Shorty reference of the Red Corps pair.
The first Get Shorty reference ever. I have been podcasting for over half a decade now, and I've yet to have an opportunity to invoke that film.
Oh, gosh. Wow.
And thank you for knowing what I was talking about.
Oh, yeah.
So many of these things, I think, just go out of the ether, and maybe somebody who's listening will get it, but whoever I'm talking to at the time doesn't. In this case, you'll be the only person to get to. What are they talking about?
Good film, though. Good film.
But ultimately, I think, you know, if you're concerned about Lucasfilm, look at Pixar, look at Marvel, and both have thrived, both have grown beyond what they probably would have otherwise in every aspect. I mean, is it perfection? Of course not. If Pixar was still owned by its original owners, if Marvel was still owned by its original owners, would they have made stupid moves? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Would we have had cause to hate the direction some Marvel comics went, some Marvel movies went? Of course.
Mm-hmm.
But something's getting done with both of these on a much grander scale.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus, and people just need...
in the case of Marvel and Lucasfilm, more Disney mashups with your favorite characters, if you're into that.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Definitely.
I say that sarcastically, like I don't care about for this sort of thing, while I'm looking right in front of my computer here at the Fozzie Chewbacca figurine that Grego Hernandez from Beanpot Toys was goodly enough to give me.
As I look at my goofy Jar Jar Binks, which... believe it or not, I only had to pay $2 for it because it was in a clearance box. Figure.
That is the only reason I'm going to forgive you for owning that. Is that was a principal purchase.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned earlier the Solo movie.
Yeah.
They are talking about the non-trilogy movies are going to be origin movies. And they're speculating, obviously, a Han Solo Boba Fett movie. And... it's pointless for us to chime in what we think there should be or what we want to see, but I want to say this.
But we're going
to
do it anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
We're fanboys.
Because it's our show, we could do that. I think, I really think that they should consider doing an origin movie, bring back Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan. Because that is a strong actor, and that is a strong character, and that there's a lot of potential there. If they give it the right script, the right director. I would love to see Ewan McGregor come back in an Obi-Wan standalone movie.
Well, that's I would a love good it. Point. You know, I'd never really thought along those lines, but that does present a compelling case for something that would actually be kind of fascinating.
Yeah, in the right hands, into the right direction, it would do a lot for the franchise and to give us something in that character that they were missing in the prequels.
Yeah. I think his character was a bit glossed over really because the focus was so much on Anakin a lot of strange and pointless intrigues and things that didn't make a lot of sense to anybody. The list goes on and on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's see. So what do you think about, they said starting 2005, of course, December 18th, 2005, and we get episode 7, which, by the way,
you're looking at 2015, perhaps?
What did I say?
2005, which would have been interesting timing.
Oh, my gosh. No, I'm sorry. 2015.
6 years before we bought.
Let's go back and edit that out. So anyway, let's start over. So they've said December 18th, 2015, when we get episode 7, which, by the way, fans are actually going to start lining up to see it on December 18th of this year. So get in line, everybody. But that's a joke.
But won't they miss Black Friday?
December 18th. But
for the next year.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
They'll miss Friday for 2014. And 2015, for that matter.
Yeah, exactly. So what are your thoughts? They've said starting 2015 we're going to get a new movie every year. Do you think they're going to – do you think that's too much? Do you think they're going to oversaturate the market with Star Wars?
You know, part of me wants to say that's impossible. Don't say that even as a joke. But, you know, the realist in me – my concern would be, yes, you could oversaturate the market. Are we going to get – what films are we going to get each year? That's the key there. Now, if we get a saga film, we get your episode 7 in 2015, and you follow that in 2016 with a Boba Fett movie,
mm-hmm.
And you follow that in 2017 with some other standalone movie or a film within the Star Wars realm. Mm-hmm. It's a standalone film, but isn't necessarily character specific.
Yeah, all new characters, new storyline, new adventures.
And then the following year, if you keep the 3-year cycle for the saga, I think you can get away with it. But if you shoot out episode 7, 8, and 9 in quick
succession,
like it's The Hobbit.
I don't think that's what they're aiming for. I think
it would be a little off-putting, especially if otherwise you're trying to maintain, apparently except for the release time. I'm a little dubious about changing the summer release, but at the same time, I think it's economics. I think they're like, I don't want to compete with the next 17 Marvel films.
I think it's smart. I think it was smart of them to do that.
At Christmas time, so we're up against romantic comedies and pandering holiday films that were produced solely so they'll get airtime on television for the next 20 years.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a smart move because any summer from here on until the end of time is going to be just oversaturated to the brim with blockbuster after blockbuster blockbuster. I think it's smart of them, and I'll tell you what's kind of funny about it is back in the day, pre-Star Wars, the studios always avoided summer releases because that was the time that they preferred not to release a movie.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
But it wasn't until movies like Star Wars and Jaws, then all of a sudden the summer release dates became a hot commodity after that. So I think it's a smart move. It's going to be weird not getting it in May like we have with the other movies, but it obviously, it didn't do much for the prequels. So let's give it a December release and see how it goes.
Just kind of mix it up a bit. And, at first blush, it can seem like it's a little proprietary, like, oh, well, that was them, this is us. But at the same time, I can see the logic there, because summer has become, this has been a golden age of summers every year. Over the USG, many years ago, even when it was Amazing Comic Cast, we were talking about comic book movies or just movies in general, because Lord knows we didn't stick strictly to comics very much. Mm-hmm. But, it occurred to me after a couple of years that 2 or 3 years down the line, it's like, wasn't last year a golden age of fanboy movies? And the year before that was another golden age of fanboy movies? It's got to the point where you come to expect Hollywood's going to put out a whole spate of big blockbusters for you to enjoy.
Yeah.
Or else, what am I going to do with my summer? I'll have to actually go do things or spend time with the family, other than at the movies where I don't have to look at them.
I think having it as coming out in the winter is going to be a big boost to the sales. I have to whenever I can invoke G.I. Joe because I'm such a G.I. Joe nut. But G.I. Joe Retaliation was supposed to come out in June and. When they announced that they were pushing it back to March release date, of course I was irritated. So was all these other G.I. Joe fans, but it actually worked in its favor. Cause I imagine if they had kept with the release date of June, Retaliation probably would have seen the same numbers as Battleship, but
I think it would have seen at least slightly better numbers.
Well, yeah. But they pushed it back to March and it gave it the playing field for it was better. It made more money in it, and it made its money back and then some. It exceeded their expectations.
I'm still waiting for my board game-based movie, Connect Four, a romantic comedy.
Hungry, hungry hippos.
I wrote an article, I think, for the USG a few years back that when Battleship was announced, and one of the movies was Connect Four, and I think Stratego was one as a period piece. I think to go back to the question of, how did I feel when I first heard the announcement, cautious optimism, I think, would be the best way to describe it. Mm-hmm. I can't say that I was thrilled, but I can't say that I was devastated either. I wasn't worried.
Yeah.
Mainly because of that connection with Marvel. I'd already been through the whole, Mickey Mouse ears on Spider-Man thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that world didn't end, this one won't.
Exactly.
And, the important thing is, and we've touched on this in I'm touching on this in other formats, and I think to some degree here as well, or else I'm just channeling everything else I've ever done. The important thing is it's going to keep Star Wars around. It will continue to be a phenomenon. How many movies or movie franchises, no matter how successful, can claim to still be that relevant all these many, many years later? I mean, there's whole generations of people. You know, there are people today who could have seen Star Wars who, you know, have introduced it to their grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you don't see that with,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially when Empire Strikes Back came out and sequels were box office poison. I think Any Which Way You Can is proof of that.
Oh, no.
I'll bring out some obscure stuff here, as always.
Wow.
But I think the important thing that the Star Wars fan community needs to do is go at this with an open mind. Be prepared for something different. Be prepared to be excited and know that you may not like everything about it, but it's helping keep what you do like about Star Wars around. You know, I was never really into Clone Wars. I watched a few episodes, but for the most part had zero appeal to me. But I still embrace the fact that that keeps Star Wars in front of the general public.
Mm-hmm. It may not be, but it sure as heck was the cup of tea of kids, the young kids who desperately wanted more Star Wars after Episode 3. And you're right, it's keeping Star Wars in the public eye, and it's keeping it fresh with the next generation of fans who, you know, once we're long gone, hopefully they'll be talking about Star Wars on their podcast or whatever they'll have in their day.
That's right, their holocast.
Telepathic cast or something.
Right. Be beamed right into your mind, Johnny Mnemonic style. Or
Logan's Run style.
Wow. I think that's a good place to kind of wrap things up, because we are getting to be around the point where we do need to wrap this up for the mm-hmm. yet another exciting episode of the Rancor Pit. Is that, you know, the bottom line is Disney's going to help perpetuate this, and those kids who Clone Wars was their cup of tea, as you said, their kids are going to be the ones seeing like Episode 9. In the theater, and that was going to be the thing that they're going to one day talk about, those that just become hardcore fans, as being mm-hmm. the first one they saw in the theater.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then maybe they'll, like, be on the ancient internet archive that was saved somewhere for history lessons or something, and find this podcast, and maybe mm-hmm. one day we'll get the holo call that they want to call us out of retirement to talk about on their show.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to have to say that I'm still very cautiously optimistic. I think I'm hearing more and more good things, exciting things. And so I am looking forward to 2015 or 2005.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Okay. Yes, I know. I'm excited. I have nothing but excitement for what's to come. I'm whatever comes, I'm going to embrace it. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to sit and just soak it all in. And I think we have great days ahead when it comes to Star Wars.
And with that, we're going to go ahead and wrap things up. Eddie, where can people find your work other than occasionally now we have folded some of your previous work into open season?
Oh, yeah. That's right.
JCU Sunday Funnies. One was up already by the time we were recording this, and more are on the way. In fact, for the next several weeks, if you're checking out JCU Sunday Funnies, it's pretty much going to be open season is going to be pretty much Eddie's work for a while now.
Which will tick off Bobby Blakey because he thinks I'm stealing his job.
That's right.
But that's okay. But no, you can find me at eddiemedina.com. If you're on Facebook, go to facebook.com/eddie.edmedart. That's E-D-M-E-D-A-R-T. Connect with me on Facebook. I do all my updates there. All my new work that comes out gets put on Facebook first. And give us feedback for the show. We want to hear what you have to think about these episodes, or if you got any ideas of what you'd like us to cover, shoot us a line at
MB JCUMAIL at yahoo.com. Or do visit our forums. We do now have some forums. We would love for you to sign up, get interactive. We're all on the forums. There are pages specific to each of us, specific to each of the shows. And just in general, talk about anything you want. The forums are there for you.
If you're local in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, we're always showing up at the local convention. So, you know, chances are if there's something going on in DFW or anywhere in North Texas for that matter, chances are one of us will be there. So stop by and say hi.
In fact, when this goes live in the very next day, if you happen to be in the Dallas area, I believe it is on a Saturday.
That's right.
You can find Eddie at the Doubletree Hotel in Dallas, Texas, at the North Texas Comic Book Show. They're having a free admission show.
Mm-hmm. And Bobby Blakey from What'd You Think is going to be there, too. We'll be sharing. We'll have tables side by side.
And depending on how soon I get back into the DFW area on Saturday and how exhausted I am from that trip, I may show up out there as well, because I do love me the opportunity to go shop and hang out with these characters. And until next time, we will be back in 2 weeks, where we will force even more Star Wars on you.
Oh, gosh. Well, safe travels to you and yours and your part of the galaxy.